floating down the road. I ain't got me nobody. I don't care if me no more. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and as usual, that means it's time for The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. Hi, folks. It's the other guy on the other podcast. I'm John Hogue. Stacy blogs at theothermccain.com, by the way.
And you can find my good friend John Hogue's work at hoguewash.com.
And we just can't get our wonderful opinion from Valdosta blogging quite so much. Hi, how you doing, Diana?
I'm great. I have had a fascinating week. Parts of which are confidential, but other parts of which I'm happy to discuss.
Okay, so you've had some confidential activity this week. Okay, well, anyways, well, this week, one of the icons of 1980s culture left us a 59-year-old Tawny Kitaen, the sexy girl from the Whitesnake videos, who also appeared with Tom Hanks in the movie Bachelor Party. Tawny Kitaen is no longer with us. She's gone on to that great fog-filled video in the sky.
Cause of death unknown.
Yes, cause of death unknown.
On the other hand, I'm sure CNN will report it as soon as there's a sufficiently good rumor.
Yeah. Boom, boom.
Well, that's your lead in for the first.
You're queuing me up.
Yes.
Oh, that's my segue, folks. I thought we were going to sit and talk a while about, you know, the events of the week, but it's kind
of. We're going to do that for
an
hour
now.
This
is just too good to miss, Stacy. Go.
Okay, I've got an item on my blog called Truth or Satire. It's getting harder to tell, and I lead with a headline from the Babylon Bee. CNN unveils new format where hosts just watch Fox News and yell at it. You know, sometimes I will just switch the, my office TV, I'll switch it over to CNN just to see what they're watching over there. And it's so true that what happened is that once Biden was inaugurated, the network lost its raison d'etre of producing anti-Trump propaganda. Ratings for CNN have evaporated since January, and unable to excite their audience with live performances of journalistic fellatio on Biden, metaphorically speaking, they devote hours every day to critiquing whatever is on Fox News. And so this week, Tucker Carlson had his introductory segment, which is, you know, is a must-see TV, his opening monologue, was asking questions about the safety of the COVID-19 vaccine, saying that the numbers of people reportedly dying after getting the vaccine are being underreported, apparently. But anyways, the numbers are very large, according to Carlson. Anyways, and I remembered watching that, and I didn't see him. You know, he was a conspiracy theory or anything like that. He was just asking questions and pointing out that, hey, if you haven't been paying attention, here's what's going on. Well, anyways, Dr. Sanjay Gupta on CNN went off on him on Thursday, said what he's done is he's basically looked at these open system adverse reporting systems and said, hey, look, this suggests that 30 people a day are dying of the vaccine. Absolutely not true, Gupta said.
You sure about that?
That's what he said. Anyways, Gupta said, the problem is that it continues to stir up this vaccine hesitant or outright vaccine reluctance, close quote. Well,
hold on a second. I mean, I can understand why somebody might not want to take a vaccine that's going to prevent them from getting a disease that, A, they're probably unlikely to get in the first place, and C, if they're in a particular age bracket, is fatal like 0.0001% of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you're more likely, quite frankly, if you're in your 20s, you're more likely to die from the measles.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's sort of like this household. My husband doesn't see any reason to get it. He doesn't have any underlying condition that puts him at risk. I've been of two or three minds about it, and the only reason I think about it is my asthma.
But
seriously, I mean,
because it does go to your lungs,
and that's the issue. I have a friend with very severe asthma who got COVID and spent her recovery took over 4 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it can be a very serious disease for some people, but so can the flu. And about 30% of all flu cases are caused by some kind of COVID virus. Look, I'm 73 years old and have coronary artery disease. And I am now fully vaccinated because statistically it's smart for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Diana, you haven't been vaccinated.
Not yet. I'm thinking I'm going to call the pub. I was leaving it for people who needed it more urgently. I didn't see any reason to get, rush the thing. But it seems like everybody who urgently needed it has had it. At this point, for people it's optional, it's okay.
Well, the other thing is, in my line of work, I'm going to be working in relatively confined spaces with people later this summer. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like a good idea at the time.
Okay.
Well, my daughter-in-law, when she got the vaccine, people say that on the Moderna, it's a two-shot vaccine. People say that second shot will really get you. I had to miss a day of work after the after getting the second Moderna, and my brother, who's 2 years older than me and has some underlying health conditions, my brother got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine this week. And the next day, that evening he was reporting feeling aching, but he took some ibuprofen and felt better. So, I don't know if I'm going to get it or not or something like that. I'm kind of like Diana, it's not an emergency, and I don't really care.
I don't care whether you get it or not, because now that I'm vaccinated, I can't get it from you and I can't give it to you.
Okay. So I'm free to die. I think the important freedom there.
You should go get a New Hampshire license plate then.
Right. Anyways, but
live free or die. Correct.
Right. Anyways, but you see that what they are doing and that what this is really about is that the Biden, and we're reaching the point, by the way, where most of the people, the elderly in particular have already, 80% or whatever have been vaccinated. And and right now they're just basically, they've got all this vaccine and they're not, the demand is not there for it.
No.
Well, okay, fine. You can move it off to other places then. Look, here's the problem. The narrative is not causing enough confusion in the public now. The public is starting to notice some of the stuff that's really going on. And so now that they can't just scream Trump, 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 Trump all the time, mean tweets.
Mean tweets.
They,
They've got to find a way to distract people from the real world.
Let me click through one of these links and tell you. According to the latest Rasmussen Report survey, Fox News, the boring Biden era has hit liberal cable TV networks hard. According to the latest Rasmussen Report survey, Fox News leads the way with 40% of likely voters saying they turn out, but liberal-leaning CNN and MSNBC are far behind. It says it may be that the biggest loser in last year's election.
Oh, Ginger.
Kill this dog. Here I am, just Ginger. What are you barking at?
Somebody's outside.
Okay.
Why don't you guys?
You guys talk. I'll be back in a second.
Because I'm going to talk. I'm going to talk about basically the fact that this whole point is to distract the public and keep them focused on the narrative rather than the real world. Because I mean, look at what happened just this last week. Meanwhile, in Portland.
When I first read your blog post about that, I went looking for the story because, oh my God, what a story. Do you know, I couldn't find it on any of the major news, even when I went in, started trying to find stuff in Portland. I couldn't find the story to the
point there's no way
I actually wrote to you and asked for your link.
Yeah, there's no way you would get a coverage from this from somebody like the Oregonian.
Yeah, it's just weird.
Anyway, BLM / Antifa, mixed group of thugs, were blocking a road in Portland. And when people tried to get by, they opened fire on the drivers.
Yeah.
One guy was shot. A guy had a window shot out of his car. One guy was pulled out of his car and beaten. And the cops didn't do a damn thing.
Of course not. Because they know that that nothing will happen. The thing is, getting shot by Antifa at this point means that it's your fault. And the cops aren't even going to try. I think this is going to end very, very badly, but you already said that. So, sorry, your story, your...
Well, no, let's take your spin on it first.
Okay. In the middle of last year, when the riots all were going, and the whole defund the police idiocy was being pushed, one of the things that I said on Facebook was, oh yeah, let major cities devolve into armed enclaves, suspiciously watching each other and everybody who passes through. That'll end well. And by the way, those enclaves in a lot of cases aren't going to be one ethnicity or anything. They're just going to be neighbors who understand and like each other. But if this starts happening, people are going to arm up more than they are right now. And as a South Georgian, I'm here to tell you that being armed up is not uncommon. And there's going to be any strange face is going to be really suspicious. And those guys over there, you don't know them. Maybe you don't like them. They're coming to your place. Are they going to be good or are they going to be bad? Well, we're armed up and we're suspicious. It'll take a little while to get there, but I don't think it's too many years until we are seeing major gunfights just because somebody came to go shopping. And they did something slightly out of hand.
Well, let's do what I consider the kind of best case scenario at the moment, which is there'll be enough pressure from the other parts of the state that the state government will be forced to do something about Portland, in which case Governor Brown has the state police and the National Guard. And the National Guard, by the way, is not only full of people who have faced down guys with AK-47s in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah.
It's full. It's got a bunch of units that have been involved in urban policing in Kosovo. And you need to move the microphone closer rather than farther away. No, I'm talking to Stacey. He's fiddling with his mic and making sure that it's in a disadvantageous place with respect to his voice.
All right.
But
I'm sorry.
But anyway, you know, that's the best case scenario, is that the National Guard and the state police wind up sorting things out. The worst case scenario is actually a little bit worse than what you were going with, which is where essentially you have in a major urban area something akin to what happened in the Battle of Athens in Tennessee in 1946, where the corrupt law enforcement was kicked out. So it's going to be ugly. It is going to be very, very ugly in Portland.
Well, the thing is that it's strictly local news. You see,
it wasn't even local news, Stacey.
Right,
that was the problem.
Yeah, yeah, and so if the media are going to ignore it, I think what you're going to is that a lot of people are going to be caught by surprise when it shows up in their community. Okay,
you know who aren't going to be caught by surprise? Most of the black urban population in the country, they're already experiencing something like this.
Oh, God.
Yes. Anyways, I had a long post this week on this subject. It's called, Is Black on Black Crime a Myth? Now, this, and like I said, it's a long post, over 2,000 words. Because I talked about my own personal connection to the story. Mm-hmm. Because what happened was that Professor Eugene Volokh of UCLA Law School, who's, a lot of us know him from the internet for a decade or more.
Well, I know him from intervening in some of our court cases as a friend of the court.
Yes. Well, yeah. Eugene Volokh was puzzled by a columnist after the Makia Bryant shooting in Columbus, Ohio, a law professor at Ohio State University wrote, quote, "The reality is that black on black crime is a myth, and that black and white people routinely commit crimes at similar rates, but black people are overwhelmingly targeted for arrest," close quote.
Stacey, math is hard.
Yeah. Well, you know, Eugene Volokh was very mildly said, "I think this is not the reality." Okay. and I don't think that Volokh, being a law professor, he doesn't want to call into doubt the bona fides of people.
Stacey, what he said was lawyer speak for horse shit.
Yeah. Well, anyways,
John,
yes.
One question. Is bullshit worse or horseshit?
Think about the smell. Bullshit is not as nearly as bad as horseshit, which is not as bad as chicken shit, which is not as bad as batshit.
Okay.
And batshit crazy is as bad as you get.
All right. So anyways, it turns out that the reason why this was so confusing, dubious, horseshit, was that it involved the Southern Poverty Law Center and a writer named Dave Neewert. Now, I've been aware of Dave Neewert for a long time. He's originally from Idaho and spent a long time in the Pacific Northwest covering actual neo-Nazis. Okay, I'm not talking about just point the finger at a Republican and call him names.
Genuine skinheads.
Yeah, yeah. He has done some good reporting about the actual extremist threat, but he got this one completely wrong. And what it comes down to is a report by Rachel Morgan for the Department of Justice. This was published in 2017. It's called Race and Hispanic Origins of Victims and Offenders 2012-2015.
That title is a weird title.
Yeah. Well, and it's a weird article when you start looking at it, because the way she aggregates the data makes it hard to make the proper comparisons. And one of the reasons my blog productivity sagged this week, other than my usual goof-offedness, was that I spent a lot of time staring at this thing, trying to find where the actual relevant facts are, because apparently Niewert skimmed through this and thought, aha, we have debunked this white supremacist myth about black-on-black crime. And I kept looking and looking and looking. Finally, I came to table three, okay? And out of that, I was able to extract the following information. Keep in mind, by the way, this doesn't include homicide.
Yes.
Okay, but in terms of serious violent crime, non-fatal violent crime, the white-on-white rate is 3.7 per 100,000, okay? The black-on-black rate is 6.7 per 100,000, and then the white-on-black and the black-on-white. Well, anyways, and I said, holy statistics, Batman, that's amazing. The per capita rate for black-on-black non-fatal serious violent crime is 81% higher than the white-on-white rate, okay? That's a lot. Yes. And that is not some trivial distinction. So this was, 2012 through 2015, where we were near the bottom of a long decline in violent crime caused by changes that happened during the 1990s, basically. Mm-hmm. But it's now surged back up. But go ahead.
Sadly.
Well, yeah. And,
Big surprise, because it's in urban areas. And urban areas, mostly Democrat, have become ungovernable because the police are scared to arrest anybody.
Yeah. Well, it has gotten bad in several places. I referenced the situation, and I, by the way, at the end of this long blog post, I linked to my American Spectator column this week, Beware of Media Myth Makers. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that in Atlanta, right? Mm-hmm. There has been a 60% increase in homicide in Atlanta this year. Last weekend, a 15-year-old girl was one of three teenagers shot in a Waffle House parking lot. Oh, she was killed, and it is it's getting serious. People are being shot like drive-by shootings on the expressway on Interstate 85 going through Atlanta. Is now you're at risk of being shot.
I mean, and when I was in California back in the late 80s, it was a big deal that we had somebody taking pot shots at people on a freeway. I mean, that was, and like now that would be, so what, right?
Yeah,
I mean, now the joke was a lot of the shootings were on the Garden Grove Freeway, which is California Highway 22. So the joke was 45 and a 22 zone, but that wouldn't be funny anymore.
Yeah, well, the thing is that because of the Black Lives Matter movement, really mainly, You know, and this goes back to the Trayvon Martin shooting, really. You know, and the what was that town in Missouri?
Ferguson.
Yes. The what
Michael Brown.
Heather McDonald. Yeah, the Michael Brown shooting. Heather McDonald had called this the Ferguson effect. And basically what has happened is that fear of the police has gone down. Hate of the police has gone up. And so you're seeing more and more suspects, particularly black suspects, okay, resisting arrest. Oh.
Look at that. Look at that college professor who was caught on body cam, just lighting into the Hispanic deputy.
Oh my God. Oh yes. This was out. He said, yeah. Oh, it was a terrible video. It went viral this week of this motorist. He pulled her over to tell her to stop talking on her cell phone.
Yes. Okay,
and she said he was threatening to murder her.
Yeah. He kept calling him a murderer and everything else. And it was a terrible thing to watch. Mm-hmm. And I became aware this week there was a student, a 17-year-old student, a high school student in Knoxville, Tennessee, his girlfriend's mother swore out a domestic violence complaint against him. His name is Anthony Thompson Jr. And he was known to carry a 9mm pistol. It was known that he owned one, and he had a 9mm pistol on him at the high school when the police came to arrest him. A struggle over the gun ensued. This was last month. A struggle over the gun ensued, and the police didn't lose the fight. Okay. Anthony Thompson Jr. has gone on to his final reward. Now, but despite the fact that he was armed, that he shot first, by the way, and that the officer who shot him was black, still, you've got Ben Crump is down there, and they're talking about justice for Anthony Thompson. I'm like, he got justice, folks.
Sadly.
You know, I'm sorry, you got a 9mm pistol on you. It was a Glock, you know. And I'm like, I'm trying to think back. Gee, when I was 17, did I own a 9mm Glock? No.
No. When you were 17, there weren't no 9mm Glocks.
Yeah, but the point is that you've got people running around with pistols everywhere, shot.
When I was 17, I had a 9mm Star.
Okay. But the thing is that you know, the family demands answers, you know, and they showed all the video, when the deputy district attorney gave a 2-hour presentation showing all the video, all the evidence they had, explaining why they're not charging the officer.
Well, but the point is I had that when I was 17. I also had access to a 9mm Luger. I had a .22 caliber rifle. I had a .410 shotgun, and they all stayed stored securely when I wasn't, you know, hunting or on the range or something like that. Certainly,
certainly didn't have it stuffed in your pants at school.
The only time they ever went to school was, of course, I matriculated at Vanderbilt when I was still 17. But going to the indoor rifle range at university, occasionally I would take my own .22. But it would, you know, I would take it park by the range, take it in, put it in the armory, and it would stay there until I was going home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the situation has just gotten out of control. And speaking of out of control, let's talk about the Capitol Police.
Well,
oh God.
I included that as a tail end of our talk about real world crime this evening. The Capitol Police, I think this was Thursday. The Capitol Police issued a response to an inspector general's report that had been issued about their counter surveillance and threat assessment activities. And the fact that their response contains the word impactful,
which is not a word.
But the fact that it contains the word impactful should tell you everything you need to know about the leadership problems with the United States Capitol Police.
The thinking problems. You know, using impact as a verb is bad enough. Using it as an adverb is actively evil. Don't do it.
Well, actually, no. It right there in the rules for construction of newspeak, it says that adding full to makes it an adverb.
No.
It's literally a form of newspeak.
Too painful for me. I'm sorry. You know, English is, in my opinion, the most powerful, flexible, useful language in which to write. There is a word for everything. You don't even have to really borrow from foreign languages, although we do that a lot.
That's one of the reasons why
English is an amazing tool, and turning nouns into verbs and nouns into adverbs is just it. Don't do it. Stop it. Have an impact. Impact is a noun. It's a good noun. Stop.
Well, here's
here's
the thing. The wonderful part about English, though, is we have so many homonyms and we have so many words that have multiple meanings. Like lead is a chemical element and it's also a verb. And so because of that, it's also English is one of the wonderful languages to write.
LEAD and LED are two different words.
Well, yes. And lead is the same spelled word and means something else.
Yes.
I think we're heading toward a discussion of important words.
Well, no, here's the thing. English then becomes a wonderful language to write with poetically. Okay. English is a much better language to write poetry in than, say, German.
German poetry. Yes, but it's not as good as Russian. That's the honest truth.
Well, that's true. Well, and neither are as good as Latin. Mm. But the point is that English is a marvelous language, and the people who want us focused on the narrative instead of the real world are, as part of what they're doing, working hard to destroy the beauty and, of English.
Yes.
But we need to understand our language and communicate properly. It's just like when these people start talking about non-birthing and birthing parents is
folks. Remember, tomorrow is birthing person's day.
I mean, it's just like I want to hurt them.
You are not alone. It hurts my heart, and I just want them to stop.
yeah, but I mean, and or for that matter, with someone who tells me that this person with a penis is a woman, you know, I look at them and it's like I want to be. Inyo Montoya, you keep using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means. Yes. However, I do know a word that that Stacy understands. It's inscribed on a yellow button.
Yes. Okay, folks.
Nice.
Folks, if you will, we have now reached the portion of the program where we remind you that we are a shameless capitalist enterprise. We're not some sort of one of these nonprofit think tank weenies out there. No.
They're our blogs for profit too.
yeah. Well, anyways, we're all about the greed here, folks. But if you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com, you will notice in the near the top of the center column is a yellow button. On the yellow button is the word donate. If you will click that button, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute money for the support of the blog as well as the podcast, and also to make my wife happy. By the way, this week I rattled the tip jar just a little bit, and I'm thankful for all our readers who contributed. But meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hogue's blog, Hoguewash.com.
You know, I have a little bit more trouble rattling the tip jar, because if you look at the tip jar icon at Hoguewash, it's got folding money in it. That doesn't rattle so nicely, but it is nice that folks put nice contributions in there. And I'm very thankful for when people hit the tip jar, they get taken off to my PayPal account, and the usual things sort of happen. Also, you can shop at the Hoguewash store, buy all sorts of interesting items with branded in various ways assorted by the blog. Or there are scattered about the internet, including at Hoguewash and at the other McCain, on blogs, various links to that are for shopping at Amazon. And those approved links actually result in a small commission coming the blogger's way if you use them. So if you want to support a blogger that way, that's a good thing to do as well. Mm-hmm. Regardless, we want you to remember the five most important words in the English language.
Hit the freaking tip jar.
Yes, please. Now, one other thing about tip jar and the other stuff over at Hoguewash, you can find across the menu at the top of the page a thing for DCMA, that's digital, DMCA, Digital Millennium Copyright Act things. Mm-hmm. If you think I'm infringing your intellectual property, click on that. It'll give you my street address and phone number and email, and you can get in touch with me on that. And if you were to look at that street address, you would notice that it was in Carroll County, Maryland. Mm-hmm. Now, when I moved to Maryland, the four western counties were Carroll County, Washington County, Allegheny County, and Garrett County. And Frederick County, is the fifth one of the counties. And where I live is on, you'll see, is on Ridge Road. And that ridge is, in fact, the geographical dividing line between the Piedmont and Western Maryland. I live on the literally on the side of the street where I'm in Western Maryland. My neighbor across the street lives in Central Maryland. I bring that up is because the five western counties, when I moved here, it was really easy. You just take those five counties and make them a congressional district. And that was the sixth congressional district until we got redistricted in 2010. And then I got gerrymandered around, and I'm actually in a district that goes all the way to Washington, D.C. I went from having a Roscoe Barnes as my Roscoe Barrett as my congressman, a very devout Republican, to Jamie Raskin, just my Congress critter. Now I share a Congress critter with somebody we've been writing about. Even though she lives in Silver Spring at the moment, is on her campaign website showing an address of Frederick, Maryland, which is clearly in the sixth district. I found on the internet a Twitter account called at Geo Campaigns, and it's Rebecca Jones Campaigning for Progress.
Campaigning for Progress.
Scientist and whistleblower Rebecca Jones. You've got to be effing kidding me. She can't do basic math, basic arithmetic. Well, accountability and science back in politics. You've got to be kidding me.
You'll notice the tweets are protected. The account hasn't tweeted yet as of the time I looked at this. But she has this hashtag, fix that. And on her other account, she's tagging Let's fix that on a lot of her posts these days. So assuming she can stay out of prison in Florida, we may have an interesting Democratic primary in the 6th District coming up in next year.
So Rebecca Jones, who has only moved to Maryland months ago,
right about the first of the year.
Yeah. She's lived in Maryland for every bit of 4 months, is going to run for Congress.
Well, you can't say she has any lack of
chutzpah.
Yeah. Yes. You and I are on the same page here.
Well, it almost makes me glad to not be in the 6th District. Although there's no telling how I'll get gerrymandered this time. The word is they're going to gerrymander things now to completely screw up the 1st District as well, which should kill off Andy Harris, which means we'll be a solid Democrat congressional thing. Stacey's having fun banging away on the typewriter. That's what you hear.
I can hear him banging away.
Yes.
I assume that this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, if you're running for Congress, if you're contemplating running for Congress, why are you protecting your tweets?
Yeah. Well, anyway, I love that "let's fix that" hashtag. I just would suggest that you might want to see what's on the hashtag now.
Okay. Hey, honey, where did those $9,000 wandering about find their home?
Yeah.
Well, not only that, but apparently she's siphoned up an order of magnitude more money than was reported on
that. It's just that you've got round numbers and absurdly silly inability to reconcile one's sums, and that's really, really, really dumb.
Mockable. Those sorts of arithmetic errors kind of make you wonder about the ability to deal with statistics. On the other hand, not all the statistics that have been floating around this week are the things people want to deal with. Did you see the jobs report?
Oh my God. Yeah. Or the lack of jobs report, as it turned out.
They only missed it by 700,000 and change.
Yeah. It was, they had been forecasting that the expectation was for about 1 million new jobs added.
Yeah, right.
And they added what? What was the number?
200.
It was so bad that that CNBC thought it was a typo. That's how bad it was.
Yeah. But the president insists that we're on the right track.
It goes to Auschwitz, where work makes you free.
All right, Mach, right. Some guy named TayQ tweeted, I think it was last night, wouldn't be surprised if 734,000 people get jobs at 3 a.m.
Cool. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me either.
Well, to which I replied to the tweet, all in Detroit, Phoenix, Atlanta, and Milwaukee.
Don't forget Atlanta.
And Philadelphia, too, I think. Yeah. It's like, but yeah, this, what has caused that is that the unemployment benefits boosted by our taxpayer dollars through this emergency COVID thing. Anyways, that in this crap that got crammed through Congress, thank you, Nancy Pelosi, thank you, Chuck Schumer, they boosted the unemployment insurance so high that now unless you make like $17 an hour, why go to work? You know, is that people are just they've just become accustomed to or institutionalized, I think is the word I saw.
Yeah, well,
There's a problem with this. Yeah, the benefits have been coming in, but people haven't been paying their rent.
Right. Right. And we're heading.
Now that the eviction moratorium has been smacked by a judge, which it should be, obviously, but still, things are going to get painful very soon.
Oh, yes. It's going to be very ugly. Not only that, there's been so much liquidity pumped into the economy. You're going to have so many dollars chasing so little productivity that the prices are going to get.
Oh,
good.
You're already seeing
inflation's going mad.
Oh yeah. Have you tried to buy plywood recently? Yeah. It's like I saw a picture. I saw a picture of a lumber truck, right? A logging truck, right? And somebody said, "Wow, no armed guards." It's like, because it's like plywood is the new cocaine. Yeah. It's the hot commodity out there. And but I mean, we're heading toward a stagflation. It's like we're back in the 70s, except the music isn't as good.
Stacey,
the 70s sucked. Okay, sorry. Aside from Jackson Brown,
Stacey, middle age is when they quit playing good music on the radio.
right.
Which for me was about 1978 or 9. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've always said that there was no real rock and roll recorded after John Bonham died, and that's where I mark the end of rock and roll, as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
what about John Bonamassa? What about Kenny Wayne Shepherd? I mean, I grant they're more blues, but.
Well, on the other hand, there are some bands that at least I can relate to since then. I mean, like U2. I admire there's some talent there on that band.
Yeah. Well, anyways, the.
Counting Crows?
The problems that are coming up, right? Okay, and here's the thing. The COVID emergency is over.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to repeat that in case anyone didn't hear me. The COVID emergency is over.
Pay attention, Larry Hogan.
Yeah, it has been over, okay, since May a year ago. Okay. Mm-hmm. First, we had 15 days to
flatten the curve,
and then another 30 days to slow the spread. Okay, that took us, the first 15 days, the end of March, then another 30 days, the end of April. Mm-hmm. May 1st, we should have been just back in business. Okay, because what that was about. The whole flatten the curve thing, what they were worried about was a shortage of ICU beds, a shortage of ventilators. You remember Mario Cuomo going, I need ventilators. Oh, I need personal protective equipment. I need this. I need that. And we moved heaven and earth. Okay.
Yeah.
We did, to try to make sure.
And then he killed them all in nursing homes and didn't need the stuff.
Right. But it was the hospitalization crisis that we were worried about at the time. That's over. That's done. There's no more shortage of medications. They have developed treatment protocols to where the survival rates are very good. Most people... it's just a cold. And so all this continued lockdown mania coming from the media class and the political class, I'm sick and damned tired of it. Let's just stop it and go back to work.
Yay.
And if you feel sick, stay home or go to the doctor.
There you go.
But, that would require people acting as if they have agency and responsibility.
Well, oh, hey, we only had three rules in the office. In my office, one person, and only one person, touches the calendar. Two, if you're sick, stay home. Three, if you get soup for lunch, you have to sit on the floor. Those were the only rules.
Well, that works for me.
All right.
Anyway, but I mean, you're starting to see some people, though, realize that people do have agency, do have personal responsibility. And it's interesting, we're beginning to see some people try to say, hold it, let's have some accountability as well.
Mm-hmm.
There was an interesting tweet that I saw from Chelsea Clinton. It said, it's so wrong of Archbishop Salvatore Cardinalone to deny President Biden and Speaker Pelosi Holy Communion because they support a woman's God-given right to choose.
It's not God-given.
Well,
let me
get to the end of the point and I'll dissect this. If Jesus were alive today, he'd be working at Planned Parenthood. Read your Bible, Father. Now let me just, well, first of all.
Chelsea Clinton, it's not a Babylon Bee parody. This is Chelsea Clinton, by the way, who was raised a Methodist, as far as I can tell.
And went to a high school in
a Quaker school.
At a Quaker school, which should definitely be pro-life.
Okay, so she's attempting to educate an Catholic archbishop.
It gets better. Her master's and doctorate degrees in philosophy are from Oxford, which is an Anglican-oriented university.
So she knows nothing about Catholic policy.
That doesn't have anything to do with it. Well, first of all, she is actually technically correct that our moral agency is God-given. Our right to choose between right and wrong is God-given.
Yes,
woman's right to choose is, in fact, God-given. But you shouldn't make bad choices. The fact that he allows us to have free will to do wrong things, it doesn't mean that it's good for us to do wrong things. But let's get back to a point of basic, I mean, very, very basic Christian doctrine. If Jesus were alive today, it's pretty basic Christian doctrine that Jesus is alive now.
Who died, who lived and died and rose again and lives evermore.
Yes, I mean, even non-creedal Christians, amen to the Apostles' Creed, which reminds us that he was crucified, died, and was buried, descended into hell, rose again on the third day from the dead, ascended to heaven, and is seated at the right hand of the Father. I mean, Jesus, at least as far as we Christians are concerned, is very much alive today.
He lives. He lives. Yes. Christ Jesus lives today.
Yes.
I've read that song. And he lives.
Yes. And Miss Clinton, if she has a Bible, can look it up. or she might even go to church on Easter.
Did I ever tell you I met her?
I'm sorry.
Did I ever tell you the story? No. It was in 2008, as Hillary's campaign, the wheels were finally coming off. They had just squeaked by to a win in Indiana and had lost the North Carolina primary to Obama. Okay, and so Chelsea had been scheduled to speak that day at Shepherdstown, at Shepherd's College, over Shepherd University, over in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, because they were heading up to the West Virginia primary. And so what happened was is that after the disaster of that Tuesday night, they scheduled Hillary to make a sudden appearance, and the entire DC press corps descended on this little college campus out here, and I happened to be there. Of course, I had been planning to be there, and so she gives her speech. But by the way, I brought my two youngest sons, Jefferson and Emerson, who at that time were. I'm going to have to think now. They were 9 and 7 years old. I brought them, and their mother had dressed them up in their ties and everything, their Sunday best. And they were right in front of the barricade. And this huge crowd were down there, and they were down there looking through the bars of this barricade. And Hillary and Chelsea went around to shake hands on what they call the rope line. Mm-hmm. And Chelsea bent over and talked to those two little boys for about 5 minutes before carrying on.
And they're good at retail politics.
What?
They are excellent at one-on-one retail politics.
She came back up to the stage, and I was on stage left. I was standing, it was like the porch of this college building. And I was there, and she came up right beside me. I said, "Thank you for talking to my sons. Those two little boys are yours?" "Yes, Jefferson and Emerson." She says, "They're so cute."
They are.
And she was a very nice person. And I had a lot of empathy for Hillary that day because she got clobbered. And they had a press conference, an impromptu press conference afterwards. And the entire press course was going, "When are you going to drop out?" You know, and urging her to quit and stuff like that. And it was just terrible. And I was sitting right next to Gail Collins, by the way, sitting on the grass, not 10 feet from Hillary when all this was going on, you know, and I'm just sitting there taking notes. That was one of my campaign trail experiences, about an arm's length away from Hillary Clinton. I'm perfectly fine now. Yeah, but that's my Chelsea Clinton story. She's a nice person, even if she's batshit crazy.
Well, the only when working as a reporter,
Christian theology.
Yeah, well, when working as a reporter, the only candidate I ever got close to was Bobby Kennedy.
Fortunately, not in L.A.
No, yeah. In Nashville, actually. But I did have two comments come in from different commenters. One was that somebody should point out to her that the Bible probably doesn't consider Herod to be one of the heroes. and the other was, well, if Jesus were at working at
Planned Parenthood,
he would be resurrecting the victims and leading them off to heaven as martyrs. But anyway, that's enough of her. I mean, her educated people with that ignorance of our basic Judeo-Christian culture are dangerous, as dangerous as the crazy people, Stacey. Maybe even more so, but crazy people are dangerous.
This one's a classic. Go.
Stacey,
what?
That's your cue. Crazy people are dangerous.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sitting over here. I'm zoned out. Okay, folks, this week, our episode of Crazy People Are Dangerous, it's Florida Man again. This time, Florida Man keeps busy, you know, if you read the headlines. It's always Florida Man this, Florida Man that. Well, Florida Man steals two cop cars. Illuminati help. Okay, Xavier Cummins was high on meth and ranting about the CIA when Volusia County Sheriff's deputies finally put the cuffs on him. The man accused of stealing two police cruisers and leading law enforcement on a high-speed pursuit in two counties had a bizarre outburst in court on Friday. Xavier Cummins is being held in the Volusia County Jail on two counts of grand theft of a motor vehicle, 2 counts of grand theft of firearm, escape, as well as other charges. When a judge denied Cummings' bond on Friday, he had an outburst that caused him to be removed from the courtroom. Illuminati, help! Cummings shouted. You ought to see this on video, by the way. But I gave you a spoiler alert.
Hagbard Celine was unavailable for comment.
Yeah. The Illuminati did not help.
The Illuminati did not help. After he was arrested, he told deputies, Cummings told deputies that he was given permission to take the Coco patrol cars through mental telepathy. The report indicates Cummings. Well, that's how he got the permission. Apparently, God told him, or some unknown power, the aliens, whatever, told him he could take those. This was Cocoa, Florida.
Probably a bunch of Bavarians.
Yeah, right. The report indicates he didn't look Bavarian to me. I was looking at his mugshot. But anyways, the report indicates Cummings showed signs of experiencing mental health issues. Oh boy, that's an understatement. He stated he used crystal meth earlier in the day and had not slept in approximately 24 hours.
Your remark. I love it.
Yeah, I said earlier this week I drank what?
Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead, Diana.
Okay. Earlier this week, I drank too much coffee, didn't get enough sleep, and made 3 typos. I didn't steal a police car, though.
Yeah. I had a bad week for typos this week, and I was just like, what's wrong with my brain? I didn't know what, but I didn't steal any police cars. Anyways, the chase was caught on a Volusia County Sheriff's helicopter video. And folks, if you want to watch this video, it is wild. Ginger, get out under there. Oh my God. The dog is up here tangled up in my headphone wire. But anyways, I hear the boogie-woogie piano. But anyways, he's now being held in the Volusia County Jail without bond. And this criminal genius, though, will certainly find a way to escape without the assistance of the Illuminati.
Either that or depending on which side he's really on, they better be on the watch for a golden submarine.
Okay. All right, folks. Well, as I said, I can hear the music in the background, which means it's about time to wrap it up. Next week, folks, you don't want to miss the show. Guess what? Wombat is coming to town.
And we'll have him in the... We will have him at the studio with us here, and we'll have Diana and Valdosta, and we'll have a good time, folks. Join us.
7 o'clock Saturday night, and we'll see ya.
Good night, Diana.
Good night. Mr. Breeze.